You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. Two hat tricks in four games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
David Goss and Kalen Carr here in Manhattan Beach, California. Finally, we shed Andrew Weeby off this coast. We sent him back to the East Coast. Kalen, thanks for being here with us.
Man, it's so nice to get a call up and out in California. I sit really just down the hallway from you, and I don't always get the call up in New York, but I guess now my luck has turned.
This is the January camp of Extra Time Radio.
Okay.
So this is me trying you out.
Cool.
Because, like, listen, we're going back into a big year. I need to know everyone that I have in my roster,
right,
in my depth pool.
Well, I never made a January camp, so this is a big call-up for me. if you keep going, kids, you know,
never
give up.
Never stop trying. Never give up. Me and Kalen here, we are going to talk about everything that's happened over the last few days. Obviously, Super Draft was a big deal, but a few more things have happened since then. Kalen, why waste any time? Let's get to it. Dax McCarty traded from the New York Red Bulls, where he's been captain, to Chicago Fire, coming out $400,000 in general allocation money. This is like shockwaves through Major League Soccer. What was your first thought when you heard this?
I was tripping. I was like, he just got married yesterday, I think. It was crazy. I mean, I saw him a week ago. He lives in my neighborhood in New York. I'm never going to run into him anymore. Yeah. How does this affect me? You know, yeah. I feel like Jesse and company aren't thinking about that. But no, I mean, he's had a whirlwind of a couple weeks, you know, getting called up back to the national team, then getting married, and then getting traded. I think when you look back on it, past the initial shock, you might understand a little bit because they do have a glutton of midfielders in that central spot. But he's always been the heart and soul of this team in a lot of ways. And I understand they need to – in MLS, you can't have that many good players in one position and not capitalize on some way. And I think his value – was the highest piece that could be possibly moved, whereas Sean Davis is probably valued much more internally than around the league simply because they don't know him as well.
And Sean Davis, homegrown player, young player who's played a couple times for them, played for their New York Red Bulls 2 team, so he's not going to cost anything against the salary cap. So now you completely shed that position, and you'd assume they have to go out and get a center back. Let's talk about what this does to our locker room, though, a team. He's the emotional leader of that team, right? He's the center of that locker room. How does the rest of the team react to something like this?
I tell you what, and this is probably, I think guys aren't naive, but I think you have to think about, I mean, he got injured, right? And if that injury doesn't happen, this trade doesn't happen to me. And I think
you're saying if they didn't see that they could play well without him.
Yeah, they got, Sean got more minutes. I think this is really, I think it really is a vote of confidence in Sean Davis, and obviously a financial move as well because they got a lot of money from him. And I think you're going to look over your shoulder a little bit if you get hurt because everybody's like, oh, don't worry, you know, it's fine. Just get healthy. Take your time to get back. And then you have to be a little bit careful now because someone else can step in, prove themselves, and suddenly make you – he's not expendable, but I think they understand, you know, maybe, you know, someone else is going to step up and get a shot. That said – he is a big figure in that locker room. He matters a lot. I think that's part of the reason why Chicago has paid so much to be able to get him, because they desperately need somebody with that character, with that personality that he has to help lead a locker room.
And now what about that combination? They brought in Juninho in Chicago. They've made designated player signings up top. They already had David Akam out wide. But we complained about their central midfield all year, about the lack of experience there at times, lack of quality. They now have Dax McCarty and Juninho. I mean, it's –
yeah,
not one of the best, but it's in that conversation at the top of MLS now.
Absolutely. I mean, they're going to have to figure out how they work together, of course, and how the team's going to play. But I think this signing, more than anything, I mean, of course, on the field counts, but I think they've needed somebody with that character, with that personality in a locker room, or somebody that guys can rally around. I mean, through the tough times, and Chicago's been through a bunch of them. They haven't had someone to lean on. He fits in the mold of a guy like a Chris Armas, who I played with in Chicago, who's going to marshal a locker room. Obviously, he's played under Armas in with the Red Bulls for the last couple of years.
Rumors around Chris Armas as well over the last week.
Yeah, and Chris Armas is the guy I've talked to about Dax before, and he sings his praises about all those little things that he does. He said he's a much better player than Armas was. Now, the only thing that I think is an extra little wrinkle here that's interesting is, if you're Dax and you're just getting a chance to get back with the national team, how does this potentially affect your chances? That's pretty unsettling, going to a team like Chicago that's not been successful. And when you're looking for an opportunity, I think he has a big challenge in front of him.
And it's not like he wasn't playing in New York. Because you could say, I mean, he's going to play every minute he wants to in Chicago because they've put this investment in him. They don't have the minutes around him, but he was
a full-time
starter.
Yeah, it's not a playing time issue. It's more of a performance.
Right.
If you're not on a good team, it's harder to show well.
Especially in that position.
Yeah, and he's going to be asked. There's going to be a lot asked of him in the locker room and on I think it's a smart move, though, for Chicago. If you're trying to build a strong team, going right up the middle is a really good place to start.
Now, another big trade coming down last week, and it's similar in the emotional part of the team. A.J. De La Garza leaving LA Galaxy for the first time in his career. He's headed to the Houston Dynamo. And this was one of those moves where you've got a new coach, a new guy in Peter Vianis taking over at GM for Bruce Arena, and they trade a player who's as beloved as there is, right, from the fans and from the players. It's a big move to have to make because now you look at it in Kurt Anolfo, there can be question marks of the locker room all of a sudden when the reason it seemed like he got the job was continuity and the fact that he knew those players. Well, now if there's animosity there, that doesn't really help you that much.
No, but you've got to give him a chance to create his own identity and his own team, make his own moves. And this type of stuff happens where you see guys where it's like, hey, he's a Dom guy. He's a Bruce guy. He's a Jesse guy. And I think that might have happened with Dax as well. I mean, of course, I think Jesse is a big Dax guy, but I think Sean Davis is also a big Jesse guy too, you know? And so I think that this is a little bit of a statement on that, and him trying to create his own identity, and maybe they felt, you know, Stairs is the guy in the middle of the park that's played there, and I know AJ got sort of yanked around at different positions last season and didn't really have his steady place like he's been. I think these guys are going to be fine in the locker room. You know, you want to believe that everybody does everything right at all times, but this is a business, so you know it's not just hyperbole. they're looking to make moves to better the team and do whatever's best for them financially.
And AJ De La Garza was a guy that we heard that Bruce Arena told, listen, I can't afford to keep you on the team. I'm going to try and get you close to where you want to be. He's from, I believe, the Northeast, so he went to Maryland. And then the new, obviously, Vianis and Anolfo sent him to Houston. And there can be a reaction, like I was saying, from the players that, well, they didn't really do my guy right.
Yeah.
And that can be a worry at some point. And that could be something that you have to at least get over. And I think it's a great move for Houston.
Yeah.
Because I think he's a phenomenal defender and experienced guy. And Wilmer's bringing in attacking, young attacking players.
Yeah. Another guy that, you know, has championship experience or championship level experience that's going to help bring a locker room together under a new manager. And I think that's really important for the Dynamo. I think it's smart. I feel for, you know, AJ and Dax because these are guys that want to fight for championships. And I think Chicago and Houston, both of my former clubs, so
go.
I say this with
the
love,
the Kaelin car,
are not in a position to do that right now. But I think both clubs have acknowledged that they're not there and they're trying to make decisions that are going to help them, you know, whether, and I think a big part of it in MLS is setting a culture, having some good leaders in locker room.
Ever that far away.
No,
right?
And look
the
at Colorado Rapids last
exactly.
year. Look at Philadelphia Union. So to sit here now in January and say that Chicago and Houston don't have a chance is really misguided. I mean, both of these teams could make the playoffs. When I picked them preseason, probably not, but they totally could, you know, and I think moves like this are more about putting the team and the club on the right path towards that sort of end game.
The last one we have to mention in this conversation, we talked about it last week, but you weren't on the show. The rumors of Jonathan Dos Santos potentially to the LA Galaxy to play with his brother Gio. We were in love with the move. LA has said they're not going to spend as big. This would have to be a big signing. What are your thoughts there? Does that put LA back into an MLS Cup conversation?
I don't know Jonathan Dos Santos that much. Why were you guys so in love with the move?
Well, we thought he was young, so it wasn't going out and getting a Gerrard guy. He's played with Gio before, and they've seemed to play well together. Obviously, Andrew Wiebe brought up the Marcus Morris twins because he's KU, and we have to talk about that at all times.
Of course, yeah.
And it just seemed like you bring in a Mexican national team player and a center mid, a guy who goes box to box, can cover a lot of ground. Jermaine Jones is tough to play with. Everyone knows that. Obviously, Sebastian Lletget's a little versatile, but it seemed like a guy you could kind of build around at the core of your team.
Yeah, and you get a sense of what he's like. I'm sure he's been around the locker room or been around the club, visiting his brother, right. Understands L.A., the culture. I think those things make sense. Obviously, if you're going to bring over a big player, you want to get a sense that he's going to fit in with the group most importantly. And, of course, literally having that familiarity is going to go a long way towards that.
Let's talk MLS Super Draft. 2017 Super Draft, we promoted it a lot, and then Dax McCarty stole the thunder. But coming in, you hadn't been around Combine as much, but you had the chance to ride the bus with the players, I think, the day of the of the draft,
on the
hang
way
out with
the
a
bus.
Couple.
I was the worst dressed guy on the bus, which is usually not a good sign if you're hanging out with rookies that are just getting drafted.
I saw a couple bow ties.
Yes. Abu Dunlady, he looked very sharp with the bow tie.
I got Ja'Cory Hayes as well.
Ja'Cory Hayes. Yeah, he had like was he a Wake kid?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had the Wake Forest bow tie, which I respect. You know, yeah. He wanted to represent for his alma mater.
Got
to
shout your colors. What was your big takeaways from being around those guys on that day?
All of their names. No, it was
you're
like
an expert now.
I was really nervous getting on the bus because I didn't know everybody. I didn't want to like disrespect any of the guys, you know, on their big day.
You were probably not as nervous as they were.
No, actually, one kid was asleep.
On the bus?
Goss, I'm telling you, I'm not going to name names, but I'm told everybody, warned him, I'm coming around to do a Facebook Live. And there was a kid leaning against the window, passed out, on the way to get drafted to, like, the biggest day of his life.
It's a stressful way to, it's a way to
just
deal with stress.
Out cold, yeah. So, anyways, that kid's got cold as ice, ice in his veins, man. He's not going to be nervous
He's
for anything.
He's taking a PK in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was cool, actually, to hang out with the group. I got to understand a little bit. I've met Abu Dunlady before here at UCLA. One of my old teammates used to coach him there, and I've had lunch with him and got to know him a little bit over the years. So I was happy to see him go number one. Split a lot of different opinions on him going into the draft. What was your take on that?
That physically he was probably the best player going into the draft, but he'd never been healthy, and there was a lot of question marks around him. You've been around him, and you've said that you didn't understand why people had those question marks. I think you'd said that he's a hard worker. Right, in your experience?
Well, I don't know if I have the volume of interaction with Abu to say that he's a hard worker or not, but I've seen his talent, you know, and I've watched him play quite a bit. I remember seeing him play actually against Stanford when Jordan Morris was playing, and it was actually a great game seeing these two go back and forth. And to be honest, Abu was more impressive on the day. He can create out of nothing. He's
more complete of a skill player now.
He's not just a goal scorer. He can kind of create on his own and pass and check back. He's comfortable on the ball. Great first touch. I think he's super talented. I think one thing is he did get – and this happens – I'm not going to hate because I'm a Berkeley guy, but this happens a lot with UCLA kids in general, where it's a little bit of there's the hype around them. You know, he had trials over at Monaco, some bigger places.
Yeah, Chelsea as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're gonna hear that. The agents are circling around you. I think that can affect you, but now he's landed with Adrian Heath, who's pretty darn good at developing young players.
They have Christian Ramirez, so Ibo Bise may not have been a starter, and I think Dunlady, if healthy, is its starter day one.
And Minnesota wanted to make a number one pick. Like, they needed to do that for the excitement.
Right.
I know the fans there wanted this to happen, and when you get a kid with this type of potential, Adrian Heath, he's not going to miss out on that opportunity.
So number two, Atlanta United, they also keep their pick. We'd heard a lot of rumors about trading. They take Miles Robinson, defender out of Syracuse, GA kid.
Yeah.
19 years old center back, though.
Big boy, too. And he looks 19. He looks young. He's a really young-looking kid, but he's huge.
Well, some people would say that about you, Kalen.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was trying to get drafted somehow. But I was talking to Carlos backstage, and he was, you know, I mean, center back, but he's in love with this kid, with his skill set. You know, basically he was saying, you know, he thinks this kid is a future national teamer, a guy that can contribute and potentially not that far off. We don't want to get too hyped on him, but
right.
He's a kid that I think When someone like Carlos Bocanegra says that this is a center back for the future, that's a good person to be vouching for you. So,
and it's good for them to get a little bit of money on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, they're investing.
You want to go cheap in the back and expensive up front.
Wow.
That's
the MLS formula right there.
Yeah.
So we thought Ibo Bisse'd go first. He starts dropping. The third pick Chicago Fire have. NYCFC trade up to take Jonathan Lewis. Jonathan Lewis, a Generation Adidas kid, went overseas to trial a little bit to make sure that he'd get himself a GA contract that he liked out of Akron. 13 assists last year in his freshman year, a speedy winger. People are talking about what the draft means anymore. To me, a team like NYCFC, that's the Villa, the Lampards, the Pirlo signings, the fact that they've traded up 2 years in a row to get guys out of the draft shows that even the big splash international teams of MLS value this draft.
Yeah, they're not messing around. It seems like they put a lot of stock in the combine as well.
Yeah.
Right? Because these guys that they've traded up for are guys who've had really good combines.
Right. So Jack Harrison, Jonathan Lewis, Kyrie Shelton, wow, just blanked on me.
Yeah.
Kyrie Shelton, three young guys they have now on the wings that can be difference makers for them going forward. Tommy McNamara, of course. So they get a little bit younger, a little bit more athletic. I really liked him. And then Ibo Bisse, Portland trades up. A team that hasn't really valued the draft in the past, they trade up to get a big, strong center forward, a guy who looks like he could play this year to go behind Adi, and potentially they might be back in the conversation for MLS Cup after the drop-off last year.
Well, they used Maddox out wide, so they kind of transitioned him into a different role, so they sort of lacked a little bit of that. I guess, is McInerney back with them?
I'm not quite sure yet.
Okay.
Good question to ask.
Okay, but there's a space up front for guys coming off the bench.
But he wasn't a difference maker off the bench last year, McInerney was.
Right.
So they needed that, whether he's coming back or not.
Yeah, no, they were looking for that position to fill, and I think obviously when they see a guy who's got number one type talent, a guy who's talked about as the number one pick, fall to number four, you saw Caleb Porter jump at that opportunity.
And then I think one of the teams we have to mention, or one of the other picks we have to mention, Julian Gressel goes to Atlanta, number eight. He was signed before Combine started, a central midfielder, winger, second forward out of Germany, out of Providence. He's a guy who looks like he could play this year. Looks like Atlanta had a very good draft. DC United, a quiet draft. Chris Oduyachim in the first round that they took at right back. They then signed Ian Harkes, who won player of the year last year, central midfielder. DC came on strong last year, Kalen. They felt if they can maintain what they did at the end of that year, it feels like this is the type of addition, along with the Costa Rican attacker they signed, that they could be at the top of the Eastern Conference this year.
Yeah, I like DC. I've always liked the personality of that team. They're built strong up the middle. They found a way as the season went on to really let Acosta kind of have a real position. They switched the formation, brought in Mullins, and really gelled at the end of the last year. I think in the playoffs, they got exposed a little bit by Montreal, who was maybe a tougher, more seasoned team. They needed that to be bloodied a little bit in the playoffs. But adding some young pieces for them is going to be big because obviously going into the following season, they're opening up a stadium, so you want to have some momentum going into that.
So the last two rounds of the MLS Super Draft will be Tuesday, January 17th, 2 p.m. It's going to happen on a conference call. It will be released after that. One other big piece that came out of draft day, though, is all these trades that I just discussed, all the trades we talk about, the exact allocation money was released. That was traded. We now know that. We know Dax McCarty was traded for $400,000 in allocation. We can kind of start to judge these moves now. How big a moment is that?
I think it's really cool. I mean, you're sitting backstage, and I'm in the green room. Susanna Collins is interviewing, you know, all the coaches and new draftees, and I'm kind of just hanging out, talking to the different technical staff.
Professional.
I'm networking.
You're creating art.
I'm working. I'm like a walking, living, breathing LinkedIn. But I'm hanging out with these guys, and you know, they're sitting there being like, "Oh, he got traded for what? $250,000? Oh, I could flip two good players into that, you know, potentially." And you see some of these conversations. And I think that transparency is really helpful for the fans, and because when you're sitting there and you're like, "What's he traded for? I don't know."
Right.
So it's just nice to know, and then also it adds a little bit of pressure and accountability to the front offices as well, to say to these technical directors that, you know, oh, you only traded Dax McCarty for this, or you only traded such and such for this. Now, $400,000 is quite a good number for someone of Dax, but Dax is a top player. So I like the fact that we can actually debate that now, though.
And we've heard from guys that, like, from guys in the front office and from coaches, we want it to be, we want transparency. Just no one wanted it to be them first. They wanted everyone to be transparent at the same time. Right. Otherwise, they were losing an advantage. And now we're seeing a blanket move across the league. And it's changed the conversation in this Dax trade because people aren't saying, oh, well, what, you know, they're going to replace. It's exactly, wow, they have this much money to spend on a center back potentially or spend on a guy to maybe do what Verone couldn't do. Maybe a guy to help out Bradley Wright Phillips. Like, we know those exact numbers. We know the type of difference it can make.
And you can hold him accountable to say, hey, you spent this amount of money to bring in this guy, and we lost Dax. And so, you know, that's a shrewd, you know, I think the Red Bulls, they're always looking ahead. And I think they try. I like what they're doing. I think they try and do things the right way. I know fans are going to be upset that Dax is gone. I don't know if I personally could pull the trigger, especially trying to get to MLS Cup
right.
on trading
Which is
someone of
part
Dax McCarty's
of their thing
quality.
Is, Dax has been so good for them, but it's been so similar the last 2 years, and it's come up short both times. And maybe for them, they look at it and say, maybe we need to shake it up a little bit, not too much.
I think it's just that they need center. They need a center back, and you can't. The way the league is structured is you can't just go out and buy a center back right now.
Right.
You know, so it's like, how can we, you know, take a chew a little bit off here and, you know, starve a little bit here to thrive here? I think that's really what it was. Less than, I'm sure if you talk to these guys, they did not want to lose Dax by any means.
The Red Bulls had Zico Lewis dropped them in the draft out of Boston College, a pick that they were pretty excited about. At number 17, last little bit on center backs, New England Revolution, Taylor Twellman reporting apparently after two TAM-level center backs, that's a team that needs some center back help.
I also just want to give a shout-out to the San Jose Earthquakes. They don't always get a lot of love, at least on some of the shows that I do. I'm trying to give them more love. San Jose, 2017, I'm giving you guys a lot more love.
Oh, is that just in general?
Yeah, I want to give them some. No, but I like their draft pick,
Jackson Yule.
I think he's a good, talented young player. And they also got Nick Lima, who's a Berkeley guy.
Yep.
You knew we were going to get to that. but I think that's two. Nick Lima, from, I think, would have been a top five pick.
They're saying he's a starting right back this year.
Yeah, I think he would have been a top five pick in this draft. So they walked into the draft. That's part of what the homegrown system does, is they already had a first-round pick taken before they even entered the draft. Now they have two. I think it was a nice couple days for them, you know, getting younger and getting a little bit more skilled and dynamic. And
first two GA Canadian signings go as well, Adonna Jarreed and Shamit Shom. A lot going on. You can go to MLSsoccer.com to check out all of the 2017 MLS Super Draft news. We're going to come up next with John Thorington, the main man in the front office for LAFC. A lot of rumors swirling around them. They finally actually have the ability to sign some players. We're in Manhattan Beach, John Thorington's home, so why not sit down with him?
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extratime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hanging out in Manhattan Beach with Extra Time Radio, Andrew Wiebe, David Goss, and John Thorington. Close to home, LAFC executive building the expansion team for 2018. John, thanks for joining us.
Of course. Pleasure to be here.
How do you feel having the whole crew, the whole MLS, as
family.
We said, yeah, as we said, family is one way to put it. You know, the Star Wars cantina, however you want to put it. That's what we described it earlier.
Yeah.
It's an interesting time.
It is, yeah. I feel like the soccer world has descended upon Manhattan Beach, which is great. It makes my commute a lot. My commute here is better than my commute to the office, so I certainly welcome it.
So what is day to day right now? What's the office mean for you?
We are so LAFC's corporate headquarters is up in West LA, in between Beverly Hills and downtown. Fully, you know, up and running. We've just opened a sales center, which is right downtown, very near the convention center where we'll be on Friday. And yeah, so day to day, I'm in the office, you know, now with our USL partnership, doing some stuff down in Orange County, traveling a lot, you know, searching high, far, and wide for our players that, you know, some for USL, some for MLS in 2018. So a little bit of everything, all incredibly exciting. I very privileged to be a part of this group.
The title here, Executive Vice President of Soccer Operations. Folks probably remember from your Chicago Fire Days, a little bit of the Vancouver Whitecaps. Mm-hmm. But I heard an interesting story.
Don't forget, DC.
Yeah, you're right.
I didn't.
No, you're right. I mean, I'm just throwing a couple out there. That's you a good might correction. Wanna, you,
others might stress some other parts of the season, but I just remember that we won an Open Cup.
There you go.
That was a fantastic Open Cup victory.
Lift the trophy.
Cup finals.
What, you know, you're looking for players. How does that work right now? Because that's kind of this weird in-between zone. Mm-hmm. With expansion teams, what sort of players can you sign at this point, or how much identification can be done for future windows when you don't have a head coach at this point? You're looking for that as well.
Yeah, well, certainly the strategic planning of who you're going after, that started as soon as I was on board. My fantasy dream world have started way before I even came on board here. So, yeah, it's been, you know, it's been exactly a year since I've been here in LA full time. And a lot of last year was a lot of infrastructure. We started our academy. We finalized the USL partnership. And all the while, you know, it's the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. And so all the while, we've been planning our roster build for 2018. We've already met with some players. We've had, you know, extensive discussions with some coaching, some of our, you know, short list of candidates for coach. The dynamics of these conversations have changed because now we actually do have the ability to sign players. You know, we've seen Orlando and New York do it in the past with Villa, for example. So the dynamics change now because we can actually move. And now with the USL partnership and housing some promising talent that we hope will become future LAFC players, it's really active. And so in terms of the roster build, everything from, you know, these USL guys I just mentioned all the way to our designated players and every spot in between, we're currently engaged with some key targets. And I think people far more experienced with me will tell me that these negotiations are never linear. They rarely are quick. You need to plan in such a way that you have the ability to move quickly when an opportunity arises. However, you know, you hear stories of targets and conversations, hot, cold. A lot of it's a function of things outside your control. So We've just done our best to put ourselves in the best position and start planning so we can be a competitive team in 2018.
We heard you've met with Atlanta United to talk about they were under a similar experience. Mm-hmm. What have they told you about how it worked for them? What have you learned?
Yeah, well, I think just in general, certainly Atlanta is a specific and recent example, but I have been so pleasantly surprised by the collegial nature of how teams work together. Obviously, as a player, you just hate everybody, and you want to, you know, and you don't get that feeling, and you do get this sense of this collective effort to really grow this league, which I think is a huge asset for Major League Soccer that probably doesn't exist necessarily in other countries. So, you know, yeah, we sat down with Atlanta. I think they made some really shrewd moves, in my humble opinion. And it's just great to, you know, connect with guys where, you know, you're a year down a path from us. What was the process like? What have you learned? And what is amazing for us, they're willing to actually share those things. And I think the phrase that people, you know, we compete on the field, but we're partners off it.
So mentors are a big thing, both on the field, soccer-wise, but also professionally across the board. Do you have anyone that you've leaned on especially, someone who's really helped guide you through this process of going from the playing side to the front office side?
Yeah, quite a few people. I think I'm very forthcoming with questions. I ask anybody that's willing to give their insight. I think there's a lot of learning I've gained from people that have been in this a long time. And been very grateful for their willingness to share. You know, this is, I just saw him downstairs, but it's not just because he pops into mind. But, you know, Chris Klein for me has blazed a trail for former players. I got to know him well. We worked really closely in the players' union. Mm-hmm. He was on the executive board. He encouraged me to be involved in the executive board, and it's been a really good sounding board for me, which probably people are surprised by given our current positions. But he's, you know, fantastic. I think he's really blazed a trail and shown that players have certain players, you know, that are willing to work hard and have certain capacities can, you know, not just go and coach, which, you know, some former players are doing a fantastic job of now in the league. But, you know, he's the president of a really, really big club in our league. So he's been a really great mentor is hard because we're somewhat close in age. Yeah, but yeah. Him, our ownership group is just full of people with experiences that I hope to one day have and success I can only dream about. That while it not necessary, I mean, Mia obviously is very conscious and of what's going on in the game and is a great resource in that regard. But, you know, guys that have experienced so much in so many different industries, and I'm all for the cross-pollination of ideas, and my job is sort of filtered into the soccer-specific context. But everyone from our president, who I work with, you know, day-to-day, Tom Penn, to, you know, sharing a wall in an office with Peter Guber, who is like the godfather of Hollywood, who, you know, if we need to look, we don't need to look any further than the Golden State Warriors for a team. They didn't start from scratch, but they even maybe started worse than from scratch in that they were, you know, bottom of the pile, off the court, on the court, and look what they've done. So Dodgers are an example. It's just a tremendous, I have mentors throughout the game through friends and connections I've made, as well as now in-house with this amazing group of ownership.
Tell me about your path to this spot. It is not a common one necessarily, player to, you know, on that front office executive mm-hmm. side.
Yeah.
How'd you get here?
I'll give it the briefest version. So I was playing 2001. I was playing for Huddersfield, and we went bankrupt. And I was the person in charge. I was the representative of the Professional Footballers Association. So I was the one. I was a 21-year-old, the only one that raised his hand to volunteer for the position. And usually that means you get the thing from the players' union and you put it up on the bulletin board, and that's it. Whereas this all of a sudden became this gong show of a situation where I had to go to the players and negotiate on their behalf as creditors, because we weren't paid, to go and find a new owner. And the new owner had to come in with a package that satisfied every single player, otherwise the club folded. And it just got piqued my interest to this idea of this intersection of business and sport. Again, you know, found myself, you know, long road down then in Chicago, and I had done my undergraduate degree while playing, as a promise to my parents. And I said, you know, and I was speaking to someone, I started being intrigued by the idea of business school. So I applied to Northwestern in 2008, and I literally, and every business school has some form of the question in their application, here's where you are, why this business school, and what do you want to do? And I literally wrote this job description. So that's not to say it's as simple as that.
Right.
It's the stars aligned for me. I've said it right off the bat, I feel incredibly privileged to be where I am, but got some great experience, obviously, as a player. It afforded me these great experiences, and I literally think this is the greatest of all of them. Went into the players' union. I was on the executive board as a player and was retiring at that year of the, you know, the real critical part of the negotiation. Became an executive with the players' union. Then as I was graduating business school, the CBA had been done. I was at this crossroads where I no longer needed to be in Chicago, looked at opportunities, and this one checked every box and then some boxes that I didn't even think about. So it was, it's been great. I've loved every second of it.
We're going to ask you, of course, about the pressure that this job holds, but mm-hmm. being 21 years old and trying to find an owner for yeah. a club and everyone's job relies on it,
yeah.
it sounds like pressure on its own.
And it's an interesting thing, and this is a really key insight I got from Peter Guber. He says there's something about, and not just that, but being an athlete, that he says it does lend itself well to leadership positions because, yes, there's stress, yes, there's pressure, but it's not like playing in front of your whole city and you're facing relegation. Or, you know, and I think it allows you to make decisions not as a fan, right? So my job is to make objective and rational decisions, not because I think this guy's my favorite player, but what suits the club well. So, yeah, that experience was really, you know, life-changing in the sense that it really steered my path away from just wanting to coach and stay on the field to opening my eyes to what is out there at, again, this intersection of business and sport.
How'd you get that deal done? Because I have to imagine there were some players that had some demands and they weren't happy, and
well,
you know, that's
this,
a crazy situation.
Yeah, Andrew, the hardest player was that guy had been released. So he actually is like, I don't care what they give me, I hope the club fails. And this right. is a club that's been around since the 1880s.
Yeah.
Or so. I mean, So you pick up some negotiation skills. Sometimes, you know, you need to come in with the heavies and you get the captain of the team to go in and be, you know. But it's hard to get people to see sense. There are a lot of emotion. Their livelihoods at stake. You have guys missing mortgages. It was really tense. I'm glad to say Huddersfield came through it. They're now, you know, within touching distance of the Premiership. So yeah. They got a new owner. We had a, you know, a package that we all agreed to that satisfied all we needed, that the stadium needed, et cetera, to continue. And it would have just been a crying shame. And it's happened, right? You know, these clubs that have such strong legacies, they make bad bets, and that's it.
You mentioned your work in the Players Union. You've worked around the Major League Soccer office as well. The CBA, it's such a complicated part of MLS. Every mechanism for players is a complicated part. You haven't run a team yet that's in the league. Do you feel comfortable with those different pieces of it? Do you feel like, to the extent a human being can, mm-hmm. have a grasp on it?
Yeah, well, I think if your implication there of knowing the CBA is an advantage, that is an advantage I have. I, you know, was involved in every meeting that took place throughout the, I don't know, what is it, 5 years of negotiations? So I certainly know it well. I lean on, you know, our president's involved in a lot of things. He's been an executive in sports and built teams, as have our owners. So I certainly know I have people to lean on. I, by no means do I think I have this all figured out, but am I confident that I do have the resources within our organization and my own, however humbly I can say, my own abilities to build a competitive team? I am confident of that.
What's your philosophy in MLS toward building a team? What do teams need? How do you construct them? Not just for success in the immediacy, but obviously yeah. long term, because the cycles in this league can be unforgiving at times.
Yeah, I think for me it's exactly what you say, and I think now you're looking at models of clubs where it's top to bottom. It's not just your first team. It's not just, you know, a USL team, but we started our academy this year, and the whole build out of that academy starts with the end in mind, and we say these are the types of players we're looking for. And, you know, without boxing 12-year-olds up, you need to have that in mind, because that's the goal. The whole point of our academy is, yes, to help people in their personal development, but it's also our owners want some return of seeing players come out in this beautiful stadium that we've built. So, yeah, for me, I think it needs to be, you start with what the club, how the club wants to play. We've started with an amazingly powerful brand about what it means to the city, and it's got this incredible traction already. But you start with your soccer identity, what you want your team to look like, what types of characters you want on the field, the balance of how you want to play, the age profile, personality profiles, the international versus domestic makeup of a team. And you start there and you define that as clearly as you can. And then that provides a filter that every soccer decision is filtered through. So whether that's who's our academy director, it's not just, well, you're a great academy director right. because you've won a national championship. It's no, this is how we play. Do you suit that? And that goes down to the academy director. That's the criteria that we're looking at and checking all of our head coaching candidates against, our USL coach, all those sorts of things that go into it. So I think rather than blow in the wind, you start by really establishing what you want your club to be about. And that's not me, that's our owners. And they, through me, you know, ask and I offer input, and they've been fantastic in hiring me to do a job and freeing me to do that and giving me a lot of responsibility, which I certainly appreciate and don't take for granted. But it starts there, and then you make your every decision accordingly.
We're going to be, I'm sure, in a long line of people that are going to grill you on the big stars mm-hmm. that you guys are looking at. But you mentioned the ownership. A lot of MLS teams have banked on veteran players. Some bank on the academy. Mm-hmm. Do you find a way to sell to this ownership group both? Because you've worked on the academy already, as you said, but we've also heard comments from Tom Penn about we want global stars. Mm-hmm. We want big names.
Yeah, I think it goes to representing our city, which I think is what has really captured our fans and to date, is that we are conscious, we hear them, we listen to them. They've been a part of our stadium design, they've been a part of our crest launch. I hear them, I listen to them. And yeah, so I think it's about representing LA, and this is not a cop-out, but part of LA is star quality, right? That's mm-hmm. what everybody thinks about when LA, but then you talk to people from LA and it's like, no, I came here to make it. I came here to put my time in to become that star. So it's not a mutually exclusive concept for us, but what I would say, though, is that when we do look at stars, we are particularly looking at, are you the right aspirational figure for our kids? Are the kids going to look at that stadium and say, wow, I want to play in that? Yes. Are you going to look at our stars and say, wow, that is an example of what I want to be and I'm dreaming to become? So that's the way I would say we're sort of marrying the two, but it is a balance.
What is a player of global stature, to quote Tom Penn? How high are you guys going? How high are you shooting? I mean, are we talking like Cristiano Ronaldo, Lionel Messi, global stature? What are we talking here?
I would say they fit the bill of global stature. I don't think they're the only two.
Okay.
Global stature, I would say players that you don't need to explain. Yeah, okay. That's one of Peter a gooberism is. If you need to explain it, there's something wrong. So we are engaged in conversations with players that I would put in that category.
When do you expect to start making player signings? And this is all, I'm sure, the actual execution of these deals.
Yeah.
A little bit new to you. So what do you what are some of them? Have there been missteps? Have there been learning experiences? What's kind of the time frame? And how are you working through all this?
Yeah, I wouldn't say missteps yet. We're still undefeated.
Yeah.
No, I think the expectation – we're talking to players, and I mean whether that activity comes this window or next window is hard to say yet. I'm confident there will be movement far ahead of 2018 that you'll start to see our roster take shape as much as is possible. We're certainly signing players that will be playing for our USL team. That process is a bit further down the road. Mm-hmm. But we are in serious conversation with some players that we would like to be – suiting up for our first team in preseason just over a year from now.
And what would you do with those players? Because you mentioned David Villa. Mm-hmm. They had Melbourne. Mm-hmm. They had Man City. What would be your plan?
Yeah, well, I think that there's the options of loaning players. There's certain a profile of player that really perfectly fits the USL for us, that they're in market, they're here, they're acclimating. And in an environment that we have helped design alongside Orange County that best prepares them to come into our first team. But I don't think David Villa would have, you know, with all due respect, yeah. But that we have really active conversations with partners around the world, clubs where they're not under our umbrella in like the Man City model, the City Football Group model, but certainly people and players that we don't think we would have trouble finding a home for.
Someone's got to coach those players. We've heard rumors about Bob Bradley. The reports were that there's been a rekindling of interest. Of course, he just was let go by Swansea City. Have you been in talks with Bob Bradley, and what are you looking for in the profile of coach?
Yeah, no, I know Bob well. Others know him even better than I do, but I had the pleasure of playing for him, when he was national team coach for a few caps, and I have a great deal of respect for Bob. I was actually sorry to see what happened in Swansea, because I do actually believe that Bob has the quality to coach at the highest level, and I think the coach American coaches are now facing the problems that American players had 20 years ago. I think we've broken through that barrier in large part because of, you know, guys like Claudio Reyna and numerous people that have gone and played and proven themselves at the highest level. And I feel like coaches are now, you know, where we were, what was it, 15, 20 years ago. And I'm sensitive to that because I was there and as a 17-year-old, and you do face unfair criticism because of your accent, and that's ridiculous to me. And so, all that said, I have a great deal of respect for Bob. I'm not going to give any specific comments on any coach that we have or have not or are interested in having conversations with. I think you understand that for obvious reasons. But, you know, I will say this, that I have been surprised. Having been around the league, I've seen the growth of this league. I felt the growth of this league, both with players and coaches. And I was expecting a good deal of interest, obviously, in LA, at Southern California, this ownership group, you have this Unreal Stadium downtown and all the rest. I have been shocked at some of the level of interest, and not the level of interest, but who is interested,
right,
as players and coaches. And that's not something that is purely an LAFC thing. I know that's happening across the league, and we at LAFC are just grateful that we are coming in at this time And, you know, on the back of what has been done in the first 20 years of MLS to get us to this point.
MLS is a unique league. There's been a lot of different theories of what makes teams successful. Do you have a profile that you're looking for in a coach? And do you have a timeline?
We certainly, as I say, the characteristics are of a coach who we think will best implement the vision of, you know, our on-field product. When we talk about timeline, I don't want to hire the best coach at a line I've drawn in the sand. I want to hire the best coach. We want to hire the best coach. And if that means we wait a month for the best coach, we'll wait a month for the best coach. And a lot of that timing is just a function of what they're doing mm-hmm. right now, which is slightly out of our control. But as I say, given the level of interest, given the excitement that's around this club and this project, I have no doubt we will get the right guy at the right time.
Let's talk about the stadium really quickly. The branding, as you mentioned, very good. I've been trying to get my hands on one of those hats for a while now. You saw them everywhere. Justin Bieber was one of the obvious ones. You guys figured out how to get them in the right hands. I think you have the folks at the front office that can do that. But the stadium, oh my. It looks like a gym.
It is.
What is
that
your favorite?
Sounded a little bit too much
design?
Like gym. You said gym.
Design feature. What do you like? What's the little thing behind the scenes that you're saying, boy, this is going to be awesome?
The player areas obviously have been my focus. I think the aha, the oh wow shot is what we call our sunset deck, which is very LA.
It's called the sunset deck.
It's
so
called
yes,
the sunset yeah. deck, yeah. It's hard to pick one. I love what we're doing for our supporters, their own dedicated section, very steep grade right on top of the field with their own ball. It's going to be a lot of fun, and I think that's what's amazing about this stadium is there's something for everyone. There's, you know, it's going to be an absolute first-class experience for the hardcore fan to the suite holder up on the sunset deck to someone who wants to be on the field, grass coming into their suite like you're at the first row of a basketball game. Mm-hmm. In the NBA. So there's so much that I can point to. I love that it's grass. I love that that soccer is the center of it. It's, you know, there's all this other ancillary business that'll be going on in and around the stadium, but it's, you know, first and foremost a soccer venue. And it's built that way. It's a soccer, there's no track. There's no separation between the fans and the stadium. And me, you know, the purest soccer fan, in me loves that. It's very loyal to the game that, you know, we're coming out center of the pitch and hopefully to rabid full house, which we're, you know, on pace. We're doing really well with tickets and all the rest of it. It's just it got a credible momentum that I'm just excited to put a product to help put a product on the field that is befitting of our fans, our stadium, our city.
You're from this city. Where do you think those fans come from? Because this city's massive, and there's mm-hmm. so many different types of people, so many different types of communities. Of course, the LA Galaxy already exists. Mm-hmm. They already have a fan base. Where do you see this stepping into the sports landscape in the city and in terms of fanship?
Yeah, I think I saw a heat map of where our fans come from, and there is a central hub, which is very urban, which is to be expected, but it spans Southern California. It goes all the way down south into Orange County, goes way out east, goes up north. It's incredible. And I think when you talk about the profile of our fan, I think what's been the beauty of it, from what I've seen, is it's everything. It's and that speaks to our brand promise, which is to unite the world city with the world's game, and to actually see it in our fans is incredible, because you actually see the application of that vision. And it's every ethnicity, it's all walks of life, it's men, it's women, it's young, it's old, it's diehard soccer enthusiast to sports fan. So it's, from what I've seen, it's a surprisingly big number, and it's a very diverse group of people.
Another year to build. This time next year, you will be down in that lobby talking about trades, trying to figure out what we're going to do with your pick, mm-hmm. making signings. We'll know a lot more. Mm-hmm. Sean Thornton, the Executive Vice President of Soccer Operations at LAFC. We appreciate your time, man. Good
Thank
luck going
guys.
Forward.
Thank you.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back here in Manhattan Beach, California, with Kalen Carr, David Goss. We are sitting here, and we're going to talk California. How easy. The mailbag, getting into it, and we got a few emails. I don't have to read any of them specifically, but basically everyone's saying San Diego, California, the Chargers are leaving. They're actually moving to StubHub Center. And what's the chances or what's the likelihood, or should there be an expansion MLS team in San Diego coming in? Kalen, you're a California guy.
I know, gosh. I'm from Northern California, though.
You guys are so particular about this.
Yeah, it's pretty different. I should know. I just ran on the boardwalk today here in Manhattan Beach. It was actually embarrassing because I was like, you know, feeling myself a little bit, took my shirt off. Who would I run into? Chris Wondolowski.
Nice.
He's like, bro, put your shirt on. But I think if I'm picking a place in California right now, I'm going to Sacramento. They already have a team. They have a club. They've got a supporter culture. There's just the Kings there, so there's a void in the marketplace. I think they're ready to go to MLS.
Yeah.
San Diego would be cool. I think it fits the same way where all these other places, these teams are leaving. So, you know, there's that craving that we've seen that's worked in Seattle and some other places. But
although Cholos and Tijuana has a presence down there, and it's very close to get to. I tried, actually, last week and couldn't get through.
Really?
Yeah.
Do you have, like, some sort of shady past? Or?
There was, like, protests. There was a four-hour wait at the border.
Because the Chargers.
No. Nothing to do with it. Whoa, Kalen. Breaking news. CNN, Kalen Carr.
Yes.
All right, so San Diego.
By the way, Sacramento. Oh. There's an episode of The Movement in Sacramento.
Wow.
Yeah. Plug,
and
shameless plug.
It all comes back full circle. You can go to MLSsoccer.com to check out The Movement, check out any news on expansion, the Super Draft. All those things. Of course, thanks to John Thornton for spending the time with us this week. We'll be back on Thursday with Andrew Wiebe. Till then.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.